Hey everyone, welcome to this class. I am really excited to share my thoughts and some information on this topic for you. This is just such a deep interest of mine, and it has been for so many years, this female and shamanic roots of different cultures. And in this, I'm going to focus a little more on yogic history and then also talk more on women in yoga today. And I also wrote a little bit about this topic in my book, so I'm going to pull in a bit there for this audio class, as well as just add in my own experience with yoga and just movement in general. And I'm going to begin by going right into my own story. So I took my first yoga class when I was only 15. And when I was a young teenager, I went through, you know, a lot of dark times as I was not living in a happy home. I was living out a lot of trauma in my life and just acting out a lot in general. And there were definitely happy moments as well, you know, in places of refuge. But I also remember that when I took my first yoga class in this community yoga center, I had never done anything like it. My mom thought it might be helpful and relaxing to me, so she found it and sent me to it. And this teacher was this older British woman. She was so peaceful. Actually, everyone in the class was older. I would think I was the youngest one. But she opened up the first class in lotus pose, and she chanted, "Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace, peace." Of course, meaning peace in Sanskrit. So at first I was uncomfortable. It was, you know, out of my comfort zone at the time, but it didn't take long for those words to really sink in and initiate a deep sense of inner peace in me. I mean, even just reciting it now totally change my consciousness. So I took that class every week for, I don't know how long, maybe a number of months, maybe half a year. But that was when I began yoga. And I always associated it with this place of sanctuary, a place where I really could leave my stress at the door and come out feeling spiritually and just physically renewed. So over the years after that, I was always drawn to yoga, and then I started to do, that was a hatha yoga class, so it was more gentle. So I moved into more intense yoga, like hot yoga and vinyasa. I really liked the workout aspect of it and got pretty addicted to that as my kind of main type of workout. And so when I was in college, maybe I was 23, I was kind of towards the end of school, I was attending this liberal arts college where it's really unique. You can create your own courses of study or what's available already, really incredible, just holistic in-person full-time programs instead of, you know, the typical individual classes that you may see in college. And I was taking this hybrid course that was just a blend of in-person study plus doing our own independent research outside of it. So this class was called Seeds, Beads, and Bees. Really interesting. It was about biodynamic living and interacting with the natural world and our bodies. And so that's what we studied part-time. And then we needed to also initiate our own course of study aligned with that. And so I used that as an entry point to learn about the history of yoga. I spent a lot of time in college studying holistic physical and energetic anatomy, somatic psychology, and this was the time that I really wanted to dive more into yoga. So at this point, as I've mentioned before, I was doing like 2 hours of yoga a day in the morning. I'd wake up early every morning and just absolutely stretch my body to the limit. I think I was at my most flexible then at that point, and I was having just chronic low back pain, but I wasn't associating it with the yoga practice. I just thought that I needed to do it more for some reason, but you know, that's actually what a lot of yogis who get injured think, that an injury or pain is a sign that they need to do more yoga. Even after things like hip replacements, they're like, I read this so many times, just trying to figure out when they can get back into yoga for injury rehabilitation, not realizing that that was definitely contributing to hip instability and an injury. But anyway, so I had spent several years before studying female shamanism and esoteric sexual cultivation practices in my own life, and I really wanted to understand more about the roots and the lineage of yoga. Yoga was starting to feel really angular to me, and from what I understood, it had a long line of this patriarchal inheritance. But I felt instinctively that maybe if I dig deeper, there would be more of a story, more of a connection to something earth-honoring, female-centric, shamanic-based, like just so many other cultures and traditions and practices that you dig into. And so I wanted to also do yoga training as part of this class. This is another amazing thing from this school, so I could get credit for doing a training and the hours I put in there as part of the course. So ultimately, that semester in my life, it really took a very different turn as I uncovered more and more from diving into studying yoga and its roots. What I learned is that there's really two sides to yoga. So one, the spiritual practice is quite ancient. And yes, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that it was originally more shamanic in nature, meaning that it looks nothing like what you practice today in studios. It likely looked more from the outside like ecstatic dance, where people and women utilize the power of movement and their bodies to accomplish incredible spiritual, magical feats of healing and transcendence. And then two, there really is absolutely no evidence that the physical practice that exists today is ancient in its origin. In fact, there is a ton of evidence that proves the exercise routine you practice today is rooted in bodybuilding and gymnastics culture and circus performance techniques. These aren't practices that promote health. They're practices that were designed to push and transcend your body's physical limits. So that's the first thing to understand, and I'll talk about that a lot more soon. So what I uncovered really rocked me. I didn't intend to find this information, and so it changed the course of what I was studying and really my life. So if the yoga that I was practicing wasn't ancient, what did that mean? If it wasn't good for my body necessarily, what did that mean? I really can't underestimate how completely wrecked I felt from this. I mean, yoga had defined my spirituality and who I was to a great degree for so many years. It really was just a big part of me. And it honestly took a while to let that go and really redefine myself outside of you know, the practices I did and the tools that I utilized. And I was really blessed that while I was on this journey of uncovering truths and learning new things, that I found Michelle Edwards and her Yoga Line teacher training. So Michelle lives on Kauai, and I found out that she had a yoga teacher training for that very semester, so I knew that I had to apply. I didn't yet have the money at the time, but once I read about it, I knew I couldn't do any other training, and I knew that the money would manifest. And actually did in the end. That was really cool. And so Yoga Line it's a style of yoga that is a heavily modified one. Michelle, the creator of it, is one of those brilliant but totally crazy women. She definitely channels something amazing, but I don't think I could study with her again for just a lot of reasons. But I absolutely credit her for changing my entire life and how I move, getting me out of pain and making me feel both incredibly light but also rooted in my body. What she downloaded into me over 6 weeks, I've carried that knowledge into my bodywork practice where I have never had any pain. Unlike all of my classmates from massage school who have since quit the profession, I carried it into my pregnancy where I felt so incredible and just had no physical issues, no pain. And I really just carried it into not just every movement class I take, but just how I move throughout every day since then. I've relearned what feels good, what doesn't feel right in my body, and I just move this way unconsciously now. When at first glance, you know, it might seem like there's a lot of moving parts. So that's my journey with yoga. And after I took the training, I came back and my professor for that class was really interested in doing professional research and papers with me on female shamanic roots of yoga. But I just think I kind of needed to let it go for a while. I integrated these natural movement and correct biomechanics into my body. I was pain-free and I honestly didn't see the point of doing yoga anymore. And I just really needed a break. And I took a break for several years, maybe at least 5 years or more. And then I started to kind of miss that everyday practice where I combined physical movement with this, what felt like a heart prayer to the universe. And this hour where I had a connection to myself and my breath, and I was just in the moment and didn't think about anything. I didn't have anything else like that in my life. And it was a meditation practice that I really missed, moving meditation. So I picked it up again. And then I saw that the women I served in my practice also really needed this knowledge. I was seeing how they were moving and breathing in ways that were contributing to some of their pelvic health issues, or that they were moving in ways that were giving them a lot of back and sacral pain and other pain within their bodies. And some of the modifications that I was telling them and showing them about were like revelations to them. It was like I showed them a few things, they tried them, and it was as if there was a whole body aha. They immediately felt better, and it was really just so simple. So I'm really honored to share what I've integrated over the years through my Yoga Alliance study, combining that with my understanding of what women's bodies and energetic rhythms need and crave into something I can offer that can change your physical experience. And that's what I'm going to share about in this course. And now I'm going to go into a history of yoga. I'll talk first about the conventionally accepted history of yoga as a spiritual practice, then some of what I've uncovered about origins of the physical practice that you do today, and finally I'm going to talk about what I've also learned about some of the female shamanic roots of yoga, which I think will really interest a lot of you women who are taking this course. So, I talk about the conventionally accepted history of yoga in my book, where it's generally divided into four periods that I'm not going to go into too much here, except to talk about it quite briefly and say that yoga is often said to originate around 3000 BC, sometimes said to be as far back as 5 or 6000 BC in the Indus Valley Civilization, which is modern India today. So all texts come from that region, and the history begins at that time, or, you know, the history that we consider begins at that time, because of course, like all other things, it's really based on evidence and texts and art that is found and uncovered. It's not dated by oral tradition, so it's likely going to be going back longer than what is said. So these four periods move through the Vedic period, the pre-classical period, the classical, and now the post-classical. And each period is marked by different important spiritual texts throughout the ages. And it's also marked by changes in consciousness, what practices the ancient yogis created and where they placed their attention on, whether that was more of a focus on spiritual transcendence or integrating the body and mindfulness into the present, which is what you kind of tend to see in more modern times. And the philosophy of yoga has changed and adapted throughout the centuries, of course, and it is such a beautiful and rich and expansive history. And I think this is why it reaches so many people, so many women. It really has so much worldly and otherworldly wisdom to offer, and really a complete set of values and practices to integrate and guide your life. And so I'm always going to value yoga as this powerful, important spiritual and philosophical tradition that really needs to be preserved and understood, and, you know, some of the more ancient roots that I'll talk about uncovered for people and women to know about. And I'll link in the resources where you can learn a little more in depth about this more conventional history of yoga as this philosophical, spiritual tradition, where you can also read more about the important texts that mark and inspires each of these periods, like the Rig Veda and the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras. And you'll understand why I keep making that distinction of spiritual versus physical as I move into talking about yoga as a physical practice. So let's just move into that. So this is quite actually controversial to say that the yoga you practice at home and the studio, there isn't evidence to suggest that it is ancient. And in fact, there are links to show that a lot of the modern poses you do are rooted in a combination of bodybuilding and gymnastics culture and circus performance techniques, all from the last 150 years. Now, this statement, it might spark a few things for you at first. You know, when I started to learn about this maybe 5-10 years ago, I was quite resistant and I didn't like this information. But once I read more into it, I have to say it was quite earth-shattering. As I've mentioned, I had really built my identity around my yoga practice for so many years. And I felt like if the practice that I was engaging in may not necessarily be ancient, and as I share more about in this course, the postures could actually use some modification to be more aligned with how our bodies could move more optimally, then why do them? You know, at least that's what I thought at the time. But I feel it's important to share this information with you, so at least you know some more information that you can kind of think about in your own life if it resonates with you, and then, you know, you can decide what you want to do with it. And I also want to say that with any esoteric, very ancient tradition, there are so many lineages and beliefs about it that can really feel conflicting. And when I shared my research on this topic, just really briefly on, you know, social media, I received some messages from women who told me that, you know, this is not what their teacher told them, that their postural practice that was passed on to them comes from a lineage many thousands of years old, and the yogic postures were, you know, channeled by ancient shamans and these holy people that were made to open up our energetic bodies and awaken different channels of energy. And I'm not trying to dispute any wisdom you've received. I honor what has been passed on to you in a sacred way and the truths that you'd like to hold based on your own lived experience. So this is really me just sharing some research and what resonated with me. I am open to hearing alternative evidence if you have it and would like to share it with me. But, you know, I'm really not interested in a debate on this. I'm just offering what knowledge I've learned, and you can choose to either dive further into it or discard it, as with anything. And also, you know, I do want to say that I talk in my book a lot about how there isn't always evidence for ancient practices. These were direct transmissions through oral tradition, but I think why this information about the postural practice resonated with me is because, regardless, you know, of whether it was ancient or not, that doesn't necessarily matter. I do feel like it conflicts with the optimal movement of the female body and female rhythms. So that, to me, just trumps everything. What matters is what we choose to integrate today, so we can adapt our movement and still connect to our breath, connect to our heart and our bodies, and find a beautiful mind-body practice within that. So that's what I hope to share within this course. Okay, so just a little bit about the history. Really, due to yoga's massive cultural influence and popularity over the last 50 to, maybe 100 years in the West, a lot of these movement principles have been absorbed into exercise and dance culture in general. And in my opinion, could really use an update and modification so that how we move supports our body and doesn't cause pain or injury. And again, is in alignment with natural movement principles. So if how you're moving is making you feel anything less than amazing in your body, perhaps there's just some things to think about or update. And with a lot of this rigidity in movement styles in general, I believe as women, and I've heard this from others, and I've felt this in my own body, we need and desire a more fluid way, less angular and rigid and regimented. So I believe that will come across in the yoga class I'm going to share with you. All right, so back to some of what I've uncovered on the history of yoga as a physical practice that we do today. And I'm going to preface this that I learned a lot of this information in the book Yoga Body: The Origins of Modern Posture Practice by Mark Singleton. So I encourage you to just check out that book to read a lot more in depth on these details, but I'm going to summarize here as well for those of you that are just not that interested in reading an entire book about it. Though I will say it is a pretty engaging and fascinating read, if you're interested in any kind of anything on the topic of yoga and cultural anthropology. So, yeah, check that out. So, to start, the only evidence of a physical pose or asana in Sanskrit, mentioned in ancient texts and displayed on seals thousands of years old, are these seated meditation postures, which was a very integral part of yoga. Yoga has this extensive tradition as a spiritual and philosophical movement and practice that has so many beliefs and components to it that don't necessarily have anything to do with this kind of physical exercise program that you see today. And though it is an entry point into the deeper path of yoga for a lot of people, which is really just a beautiful thing, of course. And Mark Singleton's book covers not only so much about the origins of modern postural practice, but also the introduction of yoga in the West and how yoga and Indian holy men or sadhus first appeared to British colonizers, essentially. And it wasn't initially in a positive light and has been repeated so many times in so many cultures. There was an appropriation of yoga and yogic practice in the mid-19th century, and it was repackaged through this lens of modern science and medicine to appeal on a widespread level and woven into culture, and really kind of moved more into a physical versus spiritual practice. And it's gone through really so many shifts and influences to be what it is today, as something that is really quite mainstream. That you could find a yoga class at probably every gym in America. So his whole book is just really such a fascinating historical read about its multifaceted origins and all the different things that have contributed to what it looks like today. So I'm just going to pull a few quotes from the book here that I think are interesting. All right, quote. To a large extent, popular postural yoga came into being in the first half of the 20th century as a hybridized product of colonial India's encounter with the worldwide physical culture movement. The forms of physical practice that predominate in popular international yoga today were developed in a climate of intense experimentation and research around a suitable regimen for Indian bodies and minds. End quote. And so he covers that time in history where there was this real interest and enthusiasm for physical fitness practices throughout the world, throughout Europe, and how yoga played into that. And this was a time where being athletic, being fit, and engaging in these routines just in general were focused and interwoven with values like being strong and competitive and not being weak in what was an increasingly industrial world to make these ideal workers and ideal citizens. And this really, again, just got tied into nationalism and morality and even eugenics, as the goal of perfection of the physical body was prioritized and suggested who you were internally, your external appearance, and how fit you are. So Singleton talks about the Swedish gymnastic roots here as connected to the physical culture movement, which emphasize this mind-body-spirit aspect that you see manifested today in modern yoga and other New Age types of physical movement. But another aspect of this time was that these physical education classes in Indian schools were often taught by ex-military men, these drill masters who knew a little bit about Swedish gymnastics and had this reputation for brutality. So these types of mass drill gymnastics was the default form of physical exercise culture for Indian youth and carried into the culture through that, influencing modern yoga practice, especially the ones carried into the West by Indian gurus of this time. And you can read more in the book, again, about the influence of Swedish gymnastics of that time, how, again, quote, gymnastics provided a convenient and intelligible explanation of the function and form of asana, which to some extent circumvented the need to engage with the complexities of Hatha yoga theory. Instead, yogasanas were reconfigured as ancient forms of movement cure with individual postures prescribed for specific diseases. Then later in that same chapter, the quote by Norman, I think you pronounce it Sjoman, the therapeutic cause-effect relation of asana is a later superimposition on what was originally a spiritual discipline only, end quote. Then there are links to postural yoga and bodybuilding culture and the heavily influential YMCA at this time, which is a Christian organization and has its roots in that. And then there's the importance of yoga from about the 1850s to at least 1930s in Indian culture as a means to raise the Indian people and in Indian society's status in the worldview, whose reputation was at this time not good. And this is another interesting quote here. Quote, this sense of physical and racial degradation was in large part the result of a stereotype promulgated by the colonial powers and internalized by Indians themselves, often via the anglicized education system, end quote. So, you know, this story is played in again and again throughout history, right? You know, you can read more in that book on how yoga began to be utilized to show that Indian people were strong, they were capable, and they had this physical, moral, and spiritual vigor. And really, that is all tied into this colonialism and racism and eugenics and hierarchies of superiority. And for me, you know, all of this, when I read it and when I've reread it, it's just really difficult and just, you know, kind of gross to realize this terrible inheritance, especially if you read the book and you look deeper into these movements and these thoughts and how people viewed Indian people. It's so racist and horrible what is quoted. So this is something to recognize, that this is part of not just yoga, not just the culture we live in general, of course, but part of so many of the practices that we have inherited today. And it's no wonder then that so many women are interested in a different way, that they just intuitively feel dissatisfied with the limited expression of movement, that their bodies may crave something more and something a little more outside of what is offered. And again, I don't want to focus too much on yoga, although that is kind of the base of the movement that I'm coming from, the class that I'm going to share with you, because it's what I know, it's what I'm trained in, it forms that foundation. But I do want to say that modern exercise routines in general have been heavily influenced by these cultures and practices, so I think it's fair to say that. Now let's talk about women.
Women in yoga. This really is even more difficult to find evidence for, as the more you go back in time, you transcend the written word into oral tradition and lore and stories, and it just gets more difficult. So I'm going to share a little about what I have researched, and then I'm going to go into really just what I intuit, what I have experienced, and what I know about women, and how we can find different ways to move aligned with our unique bodies and energies as I really continue to talk about. Now, if you have researched anything about history that is far from the mainstream, from writers such as Rhian Eisler, one of my favorites, who wrote the incredible book Chalice and the Blade, as well as Sacred Pleasure, you're going to uncover that what we are told is often just a fraction of the story, that we are given a narrative that is really male-centric. It's about hierarchies and power over others and times of war and conflict and all of that. But that isn't the whole story. The problem is when we either ignore evidence we find to the contrary or are only able to view it within this lens of our patriarchal inheritance, we miss this entire scope of the picture. So I'm going to talk about just one part of that history, one part of our history that in my studies has been repeated in nearly every culture. And there are cycles too, you know, of peace and conflict, of hierarchies and equality. But most of us only hear one side of that. So I'm going to talk about some of the really ancient female roots of yoga that were initially shamanic in nature, like so many other cultures at that time. And so these women were tantric yoga practitioners. And that's this ancient root of yoga, if you go back. So in the book Mobius Trip by Gitti Thadani, she goes on a journey. It's a beautiful memoir. And she goes on a journey to find evidence of the yogini or female yoga master in India. And she finds, among many other things, amazingly, hundreds of tantric texts and statues that are essentially collecting dust in universities and museum vaults. And in the book Passionate Enlightenment by Miranda Shaw, the whole book, she talks about so much of this history as well, and how a lot was really lost in translation, where the feminine was turned into masculine through the translation of Sanskrit to English. Miranda Shaw actually, she translates ancient texts through the help of her Indian teachers, and discovers that there are incredible descriptions where these women would meet at night and have feasts and perform ceremonies and rituals and accomplish amazing magical feats, healing and teaching others. So definitely check out that book. There's just so much beautiful descriptions of these ancient female masters and what they accomplished and what they studied and how they were appreciated in their communities. And so often women are seen as consorts or students or relegated to the background in the more mainstream depictions. And what it appears to be is actually quite far from the truth. Women were seen as the main channels of divine energy and were held in high status and reverence. So you can read more into this through female yogic and goddess culture scholars like Vicki Noble, who wrote the beautiful book Shakti Woman, Monica Seju, I think that's how you pronounce it, and Uma Dunsmore Tooley, who wrote another beautiful book, Yoni Shakti. And they talk about the evidence they've uncovered dating back to at least 7,000 BC. That early yoga was actually rooted in a female-centered shamanic practice that saw the female body as truly divine. And I talk about this in my book. I talk about this throughout all my work. But yeah, these ancient yogis, they saw that through their body, they had access to powerful states of consciousness, such as the awakening of the Kundalini energy, the Shakti at the base of their spine through bleeding and birthing. They channel the power within their bodies as portals to the divine. And women's menstrual blood and afterbirth blood was seen as sacred and holy, and their breast milk as divine nectar. And there's evidence that there were ecstatic rituals of dance and trance states. And so the very early yoga might have looked more like a dance and spiraling movement of their bodies, where again, they were in this trance state in between worlds. And the story of appropriation of female mysteries and female power is really a story as old as time and was repeated in every culture on the planet. And then that appropriation action was erased. So that, of course, we don't even know about that. And I'm going to cite some sources for where you can look further into this if you'd like, but I want to just provide a beautiful glimpse into what is a very complex history. And you can read more about this in my book. I really encourage you to do that if you have an interest in these goddess-oriented cultures and our ancient history of egalitarianism. So if you have been drawn to yoga in your life, but increasingly are dissatisfied with the movements and they just don't feel right in your body anymore, know that you have probably been drawn to these ancient roots, and you know in your bones that there is just something sacred here that is hidden deeper in the yoga. But it's really been changed into something that is for men and men's bodies. And as women, we really need to reclaim those deep ancient roots that align with our intuitive sense. The truth that our bodies are so damn sacred, that we hold incredible power that is just inherent in our design, that through spiraling and flowing movements, we actually awaken ancient pathways to that power. We literally do. And through angular rigid movements, we stifle our feminine power. And how does that sit with you, me saying that? Does this feel true, that through modern rigidity, we stifle that power? It felt true to me, and it still does, and that's why I'm offering this to you guys. So that's where I operate from, the deeper parts to everything I'm sharing with you in this course, because how we move and how we live in our bodies and especially how we view it, we can either awaken that inner power and strength, or we can align with something that doesn't serve our highest selves. So I really just encourage you to think about all this and see what feels good to you. Your body has all the answers. I truly believe that if we only quiet our minds long enough to hear our inner truths. So I think through the yoga class, this really is an opportunity for you to quiet your mind and just get deeper into your body and discover what feels really good. So thank you for listening to this class, and let's connect soon.